Hope you're having a great Thursday afternoon, getting ready for a busy, busy Friday. Trick-or-treating in Game 6 of the World Series, all coming tomorrow. Wonder how many Blue Jay players will be showing up at the door trick-or-treating tomorrow.
It's a good costume.
Costume changes.
Yeah. We have a new employee here in the Ralco building who came from the West Coast, and there's a conversation about how to prepare for Halloween.
Always buy two sizes too big so it fits over the snow suit. That's the strategy.
Jamie, but that's a good costume. You put a big jersey, a Jay's jersey on a kid, slap him in his winter coat, throw a Jay's jersey, put a bat in his hand.
No, don't put a bat in his hand. What are you doing?
Well, he'll be ready for the post-game festivities.
That's a bad idea. That is a bad idea. One of those foam ones, maybe. Even then, they're with their siblings. Who knows what could go wrong? But, of course, we're also getting ready for semifinal Saturday in the Canadian Football League.
Everything you need to get ready for game day.
Now, the Green Zone's NFL and CFL insider, Dave Naylor.
Yes, our CFL NFL insider from TSN is Dave Naylor. Dave, did you stay up till 3 a.m. Toronto time to watch game three?
You know, I was down right near the Dome, actually, at an establishment, and I was with a couple of CBC reporters who both had like something important the next morning, and I didn't. And I stayed out till about 1, and then I went and got an Uber and got home. And actually went to bed and then couldn't sleep because every 10 minutes I kept rolling over and look at my app to see what the score was, right? So I might as well have just stayed up and watched the thing because I was awake in bed until it was done. But it was, honestly, they had so many people down to that dome. I thought, if somebody hits a home run here, I'm never getting home, right? Because I had to beat the crowd.
So it would have been 3 in the morning when it ended, right?
It was about 3 in the morning. Yeah. It must have been interesting getting home, because usually after a game, you know, a percentage of the crowd just hangs around downtown Toronto. But this one would be at 3 a.m., everybody's going home. So, wow, it was something else. I mean, one of the weirdest, craziest nights in baseball. And, you know, like the younger version of me would have said, this is baseball history. I'm staying up. But I did not.
We were at the Boston Pizza. Well, that was only 1 in the morning, Saskatchewan.
A little bit different here, right, because of the time change.
They were staying open for us to watch the end of that one.
Yeah, I punched out till 1. You know, I did you guys.
That's the latest I've been up.
Locker and nigh, no question, 1 a.m.
Latest I've been up since 1991.
Naylor knows I can stay up later than 1.
Better not show up at the FRC suite. We're gonna take you to territory you've never been.
Well, Dave, let's get set for the East and West Division semifinal.
Yes.
Let's start in the West with the Stampeders and the BC Lions. When you look at the BC Lions, the way their season ended with Nathan Rourke and that defense catching fire, where do you lean on who will be coming to Saskatchewan for the West final next week?
Well, I think it's BC, but I'm always a believer that there is a way for any team, relatively, to win a football game. There is a way for them, but then there's a greater likelihood that the other team will win. So let's take the how does Calgary win this game side of it, okay? Because it's very weird that, like, for the first 13 weeks of the CFL season, Calgary has an unbelievable defense. And then they go through this four-game period when Flo Arimolade gets hurt, and they average giving up like 39.5 for 4 straight weeks after they'd only given up 30 once all season, which tells you something about Flo Arimolade. And in those 4 games that they gave up an average of nearly 40 points a game, 2 of them were against the BC Lions. They give up 90 in 2 games to the Lions, right? And okay, so here's the commonalities of not just the 2 games they played against the Lions and lost, but the other 2 they lost in there as well. One of which was to Edmonton, one of which was to Montreal, both points given up in the 30s. They were trailing every one of those games at halftime. They got off to bad starts in the BC games, VAs throwing picks, you know, that kind of stuff. And this is a team that I don't think the Stamps are built to play from behind. As much as VA can be big play VA, what makes those big plays hard to defend is when they can run it with Dedrick Mills. They got the most efficient running game in the league. But when they get behind early and stuff starts to go silly, they're not great at chasing the game in the second half. And that, you know, that's a huge part of this. So their defense kind of came around in the end of the season. Two of the three games that they played at the end of the year, one against Edmonton, one against Toronto, the other team had nothing to play for. So to me, Calgary's defense and its ability to get off to or to hang with BC till the second half, like to keep it a close game, those are the key factors. The other thing, the red zone. Red zone in those four games the Lions gave up, they let teams into the red zone 11 times, 10 of them scored touchdowns. And in BC's case, yes, 6 out of 7 times in the red zone with Nathan Rourke were scored touchdowns. So I like the Lions. There's a script for I think there's a way more likely script for the Lions to win this game than there is for Calgary. Mm-hmm. But for Calgary, it's pretty simple. Hang with them to the second half and play better in the red zone.
All right, let's take a look at the East and what kind of a Bombers team is going to show up in Montreal on Saturday.
I'm not going to tell you something that you didn't know if I say a starting quarterback is the most important player on any CFL team or any football team, right? Starting quarterback.
What? Let me write that down.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Write that down. However, even in that context, with that understanding, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like the difference between the Montreal Alouettes with and without Davis Alexander. You can see it with your eye. They look like a completely different team. I mean, you saw what they looked like with McLeod and Bethel Thompson playing that final game at Winnipeg last week. But the numbers bear it out as well. So here it is. In the 7 games that Davis Alexander started for the Montreal Alouettes, all of which they won, of course, he's never lost a game that he started, in those games, they averaged about 34 points a game. No team in the CFL averaged 34 points a game this season. So Montreal, in those 7 games, scored at a higher rate than any team in the CFL over the course of the season. Now, in the 11 games that Davis Alexander was not there, they were under 20 points a game, the lowest scoring team in the CFL. No team in the CFL averaged fewer than 20 points a game. So the presence or lack thereof of Davis Alexander swings this team to a greater degree than certainly any other player in recent memory. I don't know if I've ever seen that great a variance between who's starting a quarterback. And so, of course, since Davis is starting, we can pencil the Owls in for, I don't know, 28 to 35 points probably. They averaged 34 when he started during the season. And the question would be, can Winnipeg keep up with that? And my answer against Montreal's defense would be no. So, you know, now, the other thing about Davis Alexander, and Zach Collaros is kind of known for this as well, they're both guys who are known for in-game injuries. you think of a lot number of times you've turned on your TV in the last 2 or 3 years and seen somebody else playing quarterback with the Bombers, in the third quarter and said, what happened? Right? That's a real thing. And that could be an issue for the Bombers in this game. And it certainly could be an issue for Montreal because Davis Alexander is a guy who is, the only knock on a guy who's never lost a game. He's 11-0 in his career. Is that he hasn't always been available. So if Davis Alexander sees this game start to finish, I don't see the Owls losing.
Dave Naylor is here, our CFL and NFL insider from TSN. Coming up next, we'll go through the MOP award nominees, who's going to win, and, of course, preview our NFL game of the week, the Bills and the Chiefs renew a rivalry on Sunday. This is 650 CKOM and 980 CJMH. Real quick, let's go to the MOP nominees. Nothing really stood out of going, wow!
Nothing earth-shattering.
Snub! No. Although, I know Britton Gray's coming into, he's not too impressed that Matthew Betts got the most outstanding defensive player.
He was upset about Matthew Betts.
Well, 9 of his 15 sacks came in 3 games. So, it was like, okay. And they were against like Ottawa, Toronto, and I forget who the other team was. Nathan Rourke, Bo Levi Mitchell, head coaches Corey Mace, Jason Mosser. Am I wrong, Dave? Did something stand out to you and you went, what are we doing with the voting this year?
No, there really wasn't. I think the Betts thing is arguable, although you can say that's actually when they needed him most, because if you think of what their defense was up until Labor Day and what it's been since then, and he's been a big part of it. And they also added a couple of guys, pass rushers, to that, which probably is part of what freed Matthew to do what he's doing. So there's always dynamics like that. But no, nothing real. I mean, the most intriguing one for me, the one I would have the hardest one, is probably Rookie of the Year, which is Devin Vereshchuk who was, what, the second pick of the draft by Hamilton, who basically started for them at middle linebacker from week three on, which is, I mean, for, you know, U-Sport, first of all, U-Sport linebacker to starting linebacker in the CFL, period, is not that common a path, right? Most U-Sport linebackers end up as special teams players in the CFL. So to do it in your rookie year and to do it by week three, and, you know, to play pretty well. I know some people thought maybe, you know, the end of the season, like, you know, again, guys first time through a pro season, maybe, you know, the season gets a little long and the play drops off a little bit. But I think overall he's played very well. And Trey Vavil is the opponent there. Now, Trey Vavil made, you know, spectacular plays all season, and he did play some in Winnipeg secondary when they got all the injuries, although at the start he was just a special teams guy. That's a tough one because Varisek's playing every down, you know, of basically the entire season from week three on for Hamilton, and Vavil's playing primarily special teams. So I'd probably go Varisek there, but that's the one that's the hardest one for me.
I have a question about the coaching. And when you're sitting there, when you're weighing how to vote for somebody, do you take a look at what the coach did, or do you take a look at what they were sort of presented with? Does that make sense? Because I think that's kind of what we're looking at here. You got a coach that's, you know, at the top of the league as far as points go, and then you got a coach that did a lot with a lot of adversity.
Yeah, I think there's different hands you get dealt, right? I think often a coach of the year is somebody who got dealt a ton of adversity and got his team through it, right? That not every coach could have survived this situation, and he saw his team through it, and that becomes, you know, the virtue of how they become coach of the year. I think in other cases, it's just kind of doing your job. And I think in Corey Mace's case, that's kind of where I see it in his case. Like they got back to the postseason last year, you know, and then what's the expectation? The expectation is you take that next step forward. And the Riders did that. And if there's probably a word I would use to describe the Riders over the course of the whole season is probably, they're probably one of the most consistent teams all year. Like we had a lot of teams that had some real strong periods and some real low other periods. And Saskatchewan was not that team this year. And you think about, that's a word you hear, whether you're talking to players, whether you're talking about coaches, whether you're talking about over the course of a game, over a month or a season, it's about consistency. In fact, you know, it's almost like cliche. What do you need to do this year? Be more consistent. What do you need to do this game? Be more consistent. Well, there's a reason they say that, because it really matters. So that's kind of where I would kind of give Corey Mace marks for, you know, the job that he did with the Rough Riders this year.
Unfortunately, Dave, we only have 60 seconds to talk about one of the biggest NFL regular season games of the year. Bills Chiefs in Buffalo this weekend. Two teams not where they usually are at the top of their division, but in a fight for playoff position. How big is the win for either of these teams, and how, you know, much of a kick to the you-know-what would it be for the losing side?
Well, it's weird because the Bills, you know, who have been eliminated by Kansas City pretty much every year since the beginning of time, it feels like, have won their last four regular season games against the Chiefs. So, you know, this isn't the one they've had trouble with. All that said, the Chiefs team that rolled into Buffalo last year at 9-0 was not playing at high a level as the Chiefs team that's coming in this year has over the last five games. I mean, they've just blown everybody out. They're 4-1 in their last five. They have that weirdo loss to Jacksonville, the one where Trevor Lawrence fell down and then got up and walked into the end zone while Chris Jones watched him. But you know, the rest, everything else has been, you know, top five offense, top five defense. And so this is a real challenge. You know, since they've got Rashee Rice back, since they've got Xavier Worthy back, and it's scary for Buffalo because Buffalo's secondary has really been struggling this year. They struggled to stop the run. They struggled to stop the pass of the secondary. And the big thing, and I'll wrap this up real tight, here's the history of the Bills and Kansas City, essentially, is the inability to disrupt Patrick Mahomes at the line of scrimmage. You know, that's what you have to do. If he's going to get time, if he's going to be allowed to survey the field, they're not good enough on the back end to hold up to stop him. They lost Ed Oliver, maybe their best defensive lineman, in that game last week against Carolina. The good news is that the number 10 pick of the CFL draft, Michael Hoyt, who's taken five picks before Nathan Rourke, who the Bills signed last year after his five seasons with the Los Angeles Rams, came back from suspension last week and was a wrecking ball at the line of scrimmage. Sack and a half, three tackles, forced fumble, quarterback hit, all that kind of stuff. Michael Hoyt, number 55, Oakville, Ontario. He has to be a warrior at the line of scrimmage against Kansas City to help the Bills get past the Chiefs. There you go. Keep
Come on,
that
Bills.
Guy.
All right, on.
All right, Dave.
Picked by the Ottawa Red Blacks, but not really. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately for them, he's staying in the National Football League. Dave, we'll leave it there. We'll talk again next week ahead of the West Final.
Looking forward to it already, guys. Thanks so much.
That is our CFL and NFL insider, Dave Naylor. One less Prince today, apparently. Jamie Locker with you here on the Green Zone on this Thursday afternoon. A day of travel for the Jays and the Dodgers as they've made their way to Toronto. Both working out at the Rogers Center today ahead of Game 6 tomorrow. Of course, 6:08, first pitch. And you can hear it right here on CJME and CKOM. Of course, I was listening to the radio yesterday on my way home. Good thing.
Snell into the line. Here's the first pitch of Game 5 of the World Series, and it's hit high, left field and deep. Callback at the track, leaps at the wall, and that ball is gone! A first pitch homer for David Schneider, and the Blue Jays take the lead in the first.
And two pitches later, Vladdy went yard too, so I was listening to Ben Schulman make those calls on the way home, enjoying the radio play-by-play.
Who's got a better call, dad or the kid?
Dan has the advantage that he's on TV,
so he can let things breathe.
I enjoy, for some reason, baseball radio calls because they have to paint the picture perfectly, yeah. And Ben does a great job at that.
You need
like, from
you
the
need
color
a good
of their jerseys, the royal blue caps with the royal blue lettering, like just trying
little
to paint
like
that picture on the radio. It takes talent to do it properly.
You need a good color guy with you when if you're doing radio, right? So to help fill in the holes.
Ben does a pretty darn good job. So does Dad, of course, and Dan Schulman on the television feed. But right now, I know he was glued. I don't know if he was home yet for the first pitch yesterday. Our Green Zone Rider reporter, Britton Gray.
Get the latest news on your team from the Green Zone.
The Daily Blitz with Britton Gray.
Or were you like Evan Bray? You were in the garage getting a beverage. When Davis Schneider hit the first pitch out of the
no building. Driving home, just like you. Work till 6. That's when I get off. So mm-hmm. on my way home, heard it all on CJME. It was great.
There's somebody texted there in the basement. Their wife wanted to finish a show, and then
the young all and of the a, restless,
and then all of a sudden heard the on cheering tape. And was like, "Wait, what? You're what? The you just turned the game on me." So.
Are you engaged in this at all? I know you're a Cubs fan. I know you're a big football guy, but are you at all? Like, are you just watching it out of mild curiosity?
Well, I'm a little bit more invested. I was one of those people who thought the Dodgers in 5, like this isn't going to be close. The Dodgers have too much star power. And
I'll let you in on a little secret, Britton. Everyone thought that.
So I wasn't too invested, but it was after Game 4. I think I came into the Green Zone Lounge. First thing I said was, these guys might have a chance the way they won that game and the way they continue to get on the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So last night, they've also played on Monday, mm-hmm. curling on Mondays now. So having a chance to, I got to catch the end of that long one.
Yeah.
I did catch that one pretty much a full game, but a little bit more invested, intrigued where this will go because now it really does feel like this Jays team and the power of friendship will get them over the finish line.
The power of friendship. That's Britton Gray's go-to on what is driving the Blue Jays and the Rough Riders.
It's the only thing that makes sense, Britton. Greatness. It's the only thing that makes sense.
This season. Let's get to the Rough Riders. Let's start with the Player of the Year nominees. First off, head coach Corey Mace is, again, second straight year, the West nominee for the Coach of the Year. And once again, we'll take on Jason Moss as the Coach of the Year out of the East.
Moss won it last year, right?
Yes, he did. Shouldn't have. But... do you think Corey will win it this year? Should Corey win it this year?
Yeah, he should. The best record in the CFL. I mean, Coach of the Year, it's based on how good your team has done that year. Yeah, there's a little bit of adversity. That also plays into what teams had to overcome. The amount of injuries the Riders had, especially along the O-line, throughout that defense, still finished the best record in the CFL for only the fifth time ever. The Riders have been the best team in the CFL. That blew my mind when I read that. But yes, Corey Mace, it should be this year because Montreal, let's be honest, without Davis Alexander, they were terrible.
They're 3-8 without Davis Alexander.
So the do you agree with the Moj? Because he's all upset about...
Yeah, Broxton, the offensive lineman in BC, thought he should have been the West nominee instead of Jermarcus Hardrick of the Rough Riders, who's the West nominee.
I get when you look at the PFF, I think that's what he said in his tweet. He's the highest graded PFF guy, but I don't understand PFF grading at all. Some of it doesn't make any sense to me. So I tried to just look at the eye test. The Riders, as a whole, just have been so good. Once again, it's another kind of group award, how good the offensive line does. I think Jermarcus Hardrick has been the best in the West. We forget with the BC Lions, during the first half, eight games of the season, they weren't blowing teams out of the water like they have been. There was questions around that offensive line, just like there was questions around that defense. There was never any question around Jermarcus Hardrick this season. I think there was maybe one snap where it looked like he missed an assignment. That might have just been a miscommunication
with
Bramer
there.
Although
he was really ticked off at the right guard. After that play.
Yes. So he's been the best consistently when you look at offensive linemen as a whole. I think it was the right choice for Jermarcus Hardrick to be the West Division most outstanding offensive lineman.
Both of them were PFF's midseason all-stars, left tackle and right tackle, Broxton and Hardrick. Hardrick was grading out a bit better most often in the back half of the season. But I also, I was texting Moj personally today about this, and I said, yeah, Jermarcus Hardrick's quarterback can't run. Like Broxton's quarterback can get out of trouble. So slow down on the most sacks allowed, less sacks allowed thing, because Nathan Rourke escaped out of plenty of sacks that Trevor Harris isn't getting out of.
You tried to tweet the Moj, though. What happened there?
He blocked me on Twitter. He blocked me.
Can we do that, Locker?
But there's an explanation. You remember him on the Green Zone last week?
I do, yes.
Because I was like, we went out for drinks after the show. What did I do? Did I say something wrong when we were having smoked olds at the Hotel Sasp? And he goes, no, I blocked everyone who is tweeting Blue Jays propaganda. Because he is not a Jays fan. He's like, after they win the World Series, if they win the World Series, he will be unblocked. So
this is a very interesting moment in the Green Zone Lounge today, or slash Blue Zone Lounge today, when Jamie was like, I can't, the Moj has me blocked on Twitter. What did I do?
So I texted him, and he explained. It was like, okay.
Oh, very funny.
I thought it was about, you know, Rob Fay saying the Moj was the only guest you could smell through the radio.
We were going to give you a bit of time to complain about the Matthew Betts nomination as well.
I get it. He led the league in sacks, but my goodness, there are two games where he got half his sacks in against some bad teams near the end of the year who were done. He had 7 sacks in 2 games against the Ottawa Redblacks and the Toronto Argonauts. Outside of that, he's had 8 sacks over his last 16 games. He was non-existent for much of this season, but hey, if you play good at the end of the year, you're the most outstanding defensive player. It doesn't matter if you're a guy like Jameer Thurman, who's been solid all season long. He doesn't have the stats because teams refuse to run on the Riders because he's been so good. But hey, Matthew Betts, good old Canadian. Let's give him one there.
Is that a passport thing?
Matthew Betts gets some credit for being a dynamic pass. Plus, it's the name recognition thing. Matthew Betts. Oh, he led the league in sacks. Really good for a while. So
we're not looking into how he got those sacks, maybe.
Yeah,
okay.
That's all right. I agree
maybe
with
you. Should tweet the Moj about that one.
I can't. But coming up next, we need to get to a practice report with Britton Gray on who is actually out there today for the Rough Riders.
Yeah, very interesting.
In their first open practice. As they break off the rust a little bit, keep fresh heading into next week's West Final. This is 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Blue Zone today. The Blue Zone all
week. Still the Blue Zone even though there's no baseball tonight? How does that work?
Because the World Series is still going on.
Okay. All right. So technically, we're still the Blue. Now, what happens?
With Green Zone rider reporter Britton Gray. Let's just add that little wrinkle.
Okay, but hold on. What happens on Monday? Are we the Blue Zone on Monday?
Well, did they win? We'll see. Okay. If they lose, we're back to the Green Zone. It's West final week next week. To heck with baseball anymore. See you next year. A Green Zone writer, reporter, Britton Gray, is standing by, being very patient with us. But it was an open practice today. So, as Corey Mays said yesterday when he talked about the injury,
I'll say everybody's trending to be back. So, you know, we still got a couple guys that, you know, getting a little extra work, but everybody's trending to be where we need to be come the West Final.
Okay, so...
How true is that?
What did we see today?
They're trending in the right direction. Tommy Stevens was out there. That's good news there.
Oh, Tommy. My boy's back!
Stone Cold Tommy Stevens.
Tommy Tsunami.
Sorry, Locker.
I love it.
You lost that
one. How'd Tommy look?
Fine. He looks like he's ready to go. I imagine he'll be a welcome addition. The short yardage with Jack Cohn out there. It was successful at
Jack
points.
Did okay.
It wasn't as dynamic as they can run it.
You got a couple of breakaway runs.
Yeah, but Tommy's a different.
It's a different. Yeah. I'm like, listen, I'm not taking anything away from what Tommy, but I thought Jack did an okay job on the.
It was fine, but it's dynamic when Tommy Stevens is out there. He could break anyone.
How much
for a
bigger
long run
is teams. Tommy than Jack?
Mm-hmm. How much bigger?
Yeah. How many pounds?
Like 20 or 30?
20. Yeah.
He's a truck.
Yeah. He is a big boy.
Okay. Marcus Sales, he also missed a little bit there as he's been dealing with something. They gave him some time off. He was back out there. So that's good news for the defensive backfield.
Let's stay in the secondary with Roland Milligan Jr., the outstanding defensive player of the year last year and a CFL West Division All-CFLer/All-Star.
He wasn't out there. It was actually Nelson Lacombo who was taking reps. Out there in his spots. We'll have to wait and see kind of how things go from there. I'm intrigued. I'm not reading too much into this week. This feels like very much a week of where they will go out there, kind of run through the motions,
keep
guys
healthy
crisp.
and throw guys there.
I'm not focused on kind of where guys are playing this week right now. Next week, that'll be the big one where we can start to really find out where guys maybe do slot in.
Tuesday?
What's the schedule look like next week for practice?
I imagine they'll start Tuesday. Now, I think they have the option if they wanted to go Monday, they could as kind of a day A ahead of day one. But Tuesday to Saturday, the five-day work week, right? That's what they usually run. I don't think they'll want to mess with that routine too much here.
We need to talk about the receivers. Keyshawn Johnson, Dante Myers have been missing.
Mm-hmm.
Were they there today or no?
Yes and no. They weren't out practicing. They kind of joined practice a little bit later, just coming out to watch the guys, I guess, maybe run through some mental reps. Those two... I'm not sure what's going on with them because none of them are really limping. I don't see a brace or anything. So I still think we will see them for the West Final, but we'll have to wait and see. Sometimes injuries, it's really hard to see. We'll have to wait and see if they do get out there for practice maybe tomorrow or next week for sure.
I got a couple of questions before we let Britton grow.
Only have 30 seconds.
Both of these are easy. When are you taping the Blitz, boys?
Tonight.
Okay, we're getting a Blitz podcast, Canada's fastest growing CFL podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Get it where you find your fine podcast. So that'll drop tonight or tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow morning. It'll be up tomorrow morning.
We'll record it tonight.
Yes.
Okay. And then also, if I invited you to my place for dinner, roughly what time are you showing up?
6 p.m.
Okay, thank you. Thought I'd get that out of the way.
4:30. Because I know you will probably have pre-beverages.
That's a good point. As long as you don't show up at noon.
Oh. Producer Scott did not like me showing up at 4:30. He would not like that at all.
Okay.
Would you let me in if I showed up at 4:30?
I would. My wife probably wouldn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's a stickler for the rules.
I'll sit on the porch.
She says 6.
Just bring me the drink outside then. I'll be on your back deck.
Depends if you brought your own Gatorades or not.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, Evan Bray. Going to the garage for a beverage before game 5 of the World Series. Yeah. A beverage. That is Green Zone rider reporter Britton Gray. We'll practice tomorrow as well. as they work a little bit ahead of next week's West Final.